Bob Ballard, goodbye. Elvis Costello, hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Good to be here.
It's good to see you.
On this momentous, at this momentous time.
What a big day. Gary Speed, manager of Wales. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, he's probably got as much experience as the Prime Minister, so he'll probably make a good job of it, you know.
By the way, we've had many people perform live on the show. Never before has a person performing live started practicing in the corridor at Five Live, which you did a few minutes. It looked a bit like you were busking in our office.
Well, you got to make the money like you can. These days, I did pretty well actually out there. I had my hat in the hallway.
Yeah, and there are a tight lot around here.
It's pretty good.
You pulled off a coup. So listen, it's great to see you. And this is your. We're going to talk about National Ransom, which is your 33rd album.
No, it's not actually.
Is it not?
No, I don't know where they got that number from. It's 25 or something like that. I think they counted all the compilations and all that stuff.
Because that number's bandied around in a lot of the press, a lot of the reviews.
I just like to say big numbers, you know. Heaven knows there's not much talk about big numbers these days. You know?
But you were right, it's impressive. You've produced, in the last few years, you've produced a lot of albums.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have lots of opportunities to work, and sometimes we make records and then go and play the songs, you know? I don't know, I don't think you're going to see too many more of them now. I think the records, that might be the end of that, you know, but I don't know. I have made a few. Yeah. Plenty to catch up on, you know.
Great suit, by the way.
Thank you. It's a perfect suit for radio.
Now, you say that, yes. Elvis, but we have a number of cameras in here.
Aha.
We're a sort of mini hybrid, so we've got these three cameras here in the corner.
Well,
there,
I think it's impressive that you heard the plaid memo.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we've almost synchronised our clothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to see Elvis Costello today, you can. You go to bbc.co.uk/5live. There's a lot I want to talk to you about. Let's talk about your album now, and we'll come on to the more self-indulgent stuff that I want to ask you.
Uh-huh.
But the album's fascinating because it's a journey through history in a way, isn't it? These are songs that you have in the sleeve notes to the album, beneath the lyrics. You give each song a time and a geographical place.
Yeah, just a bit of... That's just like you reading a play, you know, they say, this is the scene, it's a misty moor, you know, a wolf is howling in the distance, or, you know, it's evening, and they've just put the tea on, whatever, you know, it's just to set the scene. And I put it at the footnote, so, you know, you can imagine it any time you want, but some of the songs were written with reference to the present moment, and some are set back in the past, where people just live in the life that they're living in these songs.
And when you say with reference to the present moment, some are essentially topical, aren't they?
That's what people have read into it, yeah. So, you know, the song National Ransom, and I'm trying to juxtapose that with the life that people live, and just an individual life, not like, I can't speak for everybody. I'm making up characters that they're little bits and pieces of things that I know to be true, but you know, you have to hear the song for that to fall into place.
National Ransom, so you've got the lyrics at the bottom, it says 1929 to the present day. And what people have read into it, and what a lot of reviewers have said, is that this is a song that is not just about Wall Street, but is dripping with contempt for Wall Street. Is that how you see it?
It's a bit more complicated than that, I think, because we're all in it, really, aren't we? You know, it's certainly we've given those people the right to run off with the big bag of money, but if we hadn't trusted them in the first place, it never would have happened. It's a complicated equation. It can't be all summed up in a song, you know. Yeah. So that's why there's more than one song on a record, because you're singing about what then happens to people and their lives, you know, and it's the things that are happening to all of us.
To some extent, is it a protest song?
I never really thought much about the idea of protest songs, because if you think about it, if you say that in advance, who's going to listen? I mean, it's got to sneak up on you, or it's a comic blues.
Okay. When you say that we trusted the banks with our money, I guess that's true. There's also
we all want a little bit more than we can have, and if we really thought about how much you know, what every transaction has got a lot of responsibility in it. Really, I mean, there's a recycle bin in the corner of this studio. And they didn't used to be, did they? Because we didn't really care about what happened to the bits of paper. Now we take a bit more responsibility for those things. As time goes on, I suppose we've been sort of careless with these transactions, and we don't really think about what goes on out of sight. You know, how did that bit of our dinner get under plastic where we can go and buy it in the supermarket? I mean, We're all guilty of just being mindful of it. The minute you start to think about it, you can drive yourself mad.
People hand over their money to banks and don't really, for a long time, didn't really know what happened to it, didn't understand it. Essentially, it was being gambled with. I
used to work for a bank, so I sort of...
You worked for Midland Bank, didn't you?
I did work for the Midland Bank before they were taken over, I used to stand outside with a whistle, and they said, if there's a robbery, blow the whistle. So I thought that was probably a bit of a dangerous thing to do. That's true.
That is true.
Yeah.
Didn't they have a telephone? Proper alarm?
I'm talking about a while ago, before telephones. No, they didn't have an alarm.
Working at the Midland Bank in the 19th century?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. The horse-drawn carriage would come with the bullion on it. No, I mean, the security guard van would come up and the guy would have a helmet on and I'd be standing outside with a silver whistle and they'd say, if there's a robbery, blow that whistle. Now, who do you think they'd shoot first?
Yeah. Where's that noise coming from? Oh, that man in front of me.
Yeah.
Did you ever have to blow it? Did you ever see a robbery?
No. I did accidentally step on the alarm. I did step on the alarm accidentally a couple of times.
Did loads of police descend from nowhere?
Well, they had to kind of call them and say, don't come. Just a guy with big feet.
By the way, you're right, there's lots of changes. We have the recycling bin, that's new. We have a soap dispenser. In recent months, for some reason, the BBC have decided we have to have hand soap dispensers in our studio. Don't quite know what the reason for that is. I guess we'd like our guests to have clean hands.
Yep.
It's considered important.
Symbolic.
So you're going to do... This is exciting news, Elvis. You're going to do two songs for us today.
Apparently.
Yeah. And you're going to do two from your new album. The album is National Ransom, which is the first song you would like to perform this afternoon.
Let's have a bit of a rock and roll song for you. This is called Spell at Your Castle. Want me to play it now?
Yeah, if you're happy. All right.
Fast. Come back, baby, 'cause I don't think that I can last. And I wonder whether you got some other kind of lover that you like to please better than me. Don't think I can take it. How am I gonna break it? The spell that you cast. The spell that you cast, the spell that you've woven, well, it seems to be what's coming undone. Come back, baby, or at least tell me where you are going. And you know quite well that I'm not a jealous kind of fella.
Thank you. Thank you. I always make it when plays live. It sounds slightly pitiful. There's just two of us to applaud, but that's Louise Perry who's going to do the travel there.
I like the stereo clapping.
It was genuinely enthusiastic.
It was, absolutely.
So that was the spell that you cast from Elvis's new album, National Ransom. And as we said earlier, the sleeve notes geographically place all of the songs and give them a time. So that's the Castle Hotel Richmond, 1965.
Yeah, well, I thought that's a kind of modbilly song, that one. It's kind of a mixture of mod and hillbilly music. No, the Castle Hotel is somewhere I used to walk by when I came back from the Odeon cinema with my mum when I was a kid going to the cinema on a Friday night. She'd take me to see A films, which were slightly racy ones with, like, and,
cause A films?
A films. They used to be different kind of, back before you were born, they used to be, different kind of ratings than they've got now. They
so had, this is where we get the phrase B-movie from?
Well, no, B-movies were just movies that played second to the main movie. Mm. There used to be U, A, and X, and okay. Of course X was really, like, off limits, but you couldn't go to that when you're a kid, but if you were with an adult, you could go and see an A, and you might see a bit of Stocking Top or something. Very good, you know, if you were about sort of 11 or 12, it was pretty exciting.
Yeah. Exciting, yeah.
Something, somebody in a chiffon robe or something, it could be quite risque.
Albus, we're going to take some travel with the aforementioned Louise Perry, who took part in that stereo applause.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back and talk some more, loads of questions for you as well. 85058, bacon@bbc.co.uk. If you have a question for Elvis Costello, the new album is National Ransom. He'll play another song in a few minutes' time as well. And you can see him today by going to bbc.co.uk/5live. More with Elvis after Louise. There's been a changing of guitar during that Chelsea Man United trial. It's 21 minutes past two. Elvis Costello is here. If we may have to interrupt our conversation to bring you news of Julian Assange, the man behind WikiLeaks. He is applying for bail at the moment, and we'll find out if he is granted bail within, we think, the next 10 minutes or so. Elvis, would you like some questions from the listenership?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. I have read that Elvis is a big Neil Young fan like me. Does he think that he will still be actively making music for public consumption at the age Neil is now, 65? This is from Sean in Hull. How old are you now, Elvis?
If you 56. So I haven't got that long to go. You know, I did every year Neil and Peggy Young do a great concert in support of the Bridge School. Which sort of works with kids with cerebral palsy. It's an amazing concert, big, huge scale thing. 20,000 people come for a couple of nights in Palo Alto in San Francisco. And I watched him open the show and I watched him close the show. And I thought, well, yeah, that's why I've always loved what he did. He's always different and he's gone his own way. And yeah, he'd be one of the people that I've always admired because it gives you the confidence. Some things he does, they don't work out, and he goes on and does another thing that's amazing, you know.
And does he still have the same energy as before?
Tremendous. I've played with him, actually, at that Bridge School 20 years ago. I played Down by the River with him, and it was... It's an acoustic concert, because the kids from the school are there on the stage, and they keep the volume relatively low, and it was just as intense as it would have been if we'd been blasting through big amps. I mean, he was amazing. And I saw him with the Buffalo Springfield, and they hadn't played 43 years since they'd done a concert, and it was right alive, you know.
Yeah.
They're really good. I have no idea. I mean, things are changing all the time. I've just wanted to play. That's what I do. I'm just out there playing, you know.
So in other words, you will just keep going?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. That's the answer to that.
It is.
Yeah.
Can you ask Elvis whether he is likely to repeat his writing partnership with Paul McCartney? And what he was thinking on the 30th anniversary of Lennon's death last week, says Neil Dutton from Birkenhead, Elvis's hometown.
Well, it's my dad's hometown, actually, but I did spend a lot of time there as a kid. The first question, I mean, you know, Paul and I wrote 12 songs together. It's not something I ever thought I would ever have the opportunity to say, being in the Beatles fan club when I was 9. You know, but I was all grown up and in long trousers by the time I got to work with him. You know, it was a bit sort of head spinning at first, but he's always.
You must
been
in awe of him the first time.
Well, I mean, the invitation came to write songs, and you know, I assumed he kind of there was something I had to offer, and we wrote some pretty good songs. And you know, whenever I see him, I saw him recently actually in this building down on Jules Holland's show, and he's terrific. You know, that's the other answer. I mean. When somebody that you admire and is greatly loved is killed in terrible circumstances, as with John Lennon, for me it's like every day that you would miss somebody like that. I don't think the one anniversary is more significant than every day in between. I wouldn't presume to say what his family would feel, but that's what I imagine when you lose somebody. You miss them every day, don't you?
Yeah, of course. Except yeah,
I think that people kind of just like to make a sort of pageant and a summary of what they feel at that time. But I didn't kind of join in with any. I didn't respond to any of the requests for quotes or anything like that. There are lots of people because they're just filling up magazines and newspapers. I'm not saying it's insincere, But the thoughts that I have, I'd rather just have for myself.
You know? Were filling up magazines, that's true. We ourselves did a special programme about...
I'm not criticising for doing it, because I think it's good it's acknowledged, and it would be a shame if somebody who'd made beautiful records and is obviously still loved were somehow to slip from view. I mean, it's there are people that it happens to, you know.
The only distinction, when you say one anniversary isn't more significant than another, that is essentially true. The only thing I've noticed with Lennon is that with the passage of time, his legend seems to grow even bigger.
I don't doubt that's true as well. I mean, that's going to happen with people that have died in unexpectedly, you know, people that were killed, and you know, that's obviously true of Buddy Holly, say, you know, because everybody goes... He was so young when he died, people would wonder what he would have achieved. The songs are still played today, you know, that he sang, even though that kind of music is kind of not in fashion anymore. People still know his songs. And I think it'll always be true of the Lennon, the McCartney songs and the Lennon songs from the solo career. So, yes, it's true, it's grown, but that doesn't mean that you know, your feelings about that moment and everything... I think for anybody that admired him or the people that really knew him and loved him, that would be different, you know, it would be every day.
And just on Paul McCartney again for a moment, you performed fairly recently, not that long ago, at the White House.
That's right.
And you performed in front of Paul McCartney, and you performed a Beatles song, right, in front of Paul McCartney and in front of Barack Obama.
Yeah, it was a very small room, but kind of about as wide as this room, with Paul and his family sitting in the front row next to the president and the first lady and all of the dignitaries. And of course, you know, it's a little nerve-wracking, but if you didn't enjoy something like that, you'd be a fool, because it's not the commonplace gig. But, you know, the next gig I do will be just my show, you know, if you didn't take the opportunity. And I had a little bit of insurance. I had Master Sergeant Matthew Harding of the President's Own Marine Band to play the famous trumpet solo from Penny Lane. So I had a little bit of a trick up my sleeve, and they revealed him in full dress uniform playing this amazing trumpet solo. So he stole the show, really, truthfully.
Did you take a little moment there to kind of reflect on, you know, the journey that you'd been on?
I did, in a sense. They asked me to speak, and everybody on the bill, and it was, you know, Jack White from the White Stripes, Emmylou Harris, Karim Bailey Ray, the Jonas Brothers. It was a real mixed group of people that they brought in to sing Paul's songs. A lot of people were very nervous, and I've in the past always felt that when I've been on those such, you know, big events, I've maybe got myself a little bit too concentrated to try and do well and end up not enjoying it.
Yeah.
And I was actually felt strangely relaxed, and I did. I just told a story of what is really true. So my family is from Merseyside, and it was something that all of our family kind of took interest in. Me as a fan, my mum and dad as kind of this curiosity. These local lads went from, you know, being seen on TV to suddenly being world famous in a, you know, it was a very short period of time. It was about 18 months it took for them to become world famous. So I just said that on the stage, and I sang Penny Lane because my mum comes from about, well, less than half a mile away from Penny Lane. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's folk music, you know.
But for you personally, to be there standing next to the president in the White House performing in front of a Beatle.
Yeah. It's something that when you've been in doing this for a while, there's occasions that are particularly unusual where you find yourself in certain company. And then there's just your regular gig when you go back to, you know, like sitting in the van with a milky coffee.
Does that become deeply underwhelming once you've done the stranger
gigs?
No,
I mean, that's really my life.
This email says, I've wanted to ask Elvis this question for ages, back in the late 70s or early 80s. I think it was on the show Magpie. Elvis was asked...
Magpie?
Yeah, it was an old kids' TV show.
I know
it,
yeah.
It was set up to rival... It was set up by ITV to take down Blue Peter and fail.
And take down Blue Peter.
What advice would you give to young people who wanted to get into the music business? This is what you were asked this question on Magpie in the 70s or 80s. Your response was, you will only succeed if you have a talent for playing music and singing. And this guy, Jim in Belfast, goes on to say, in the light of Stockake and Waterman and the Simon Cowell eras, what advice would he give now? I am too old now, but he burst my bubble all those years ago.
No, I still think, you know, you can be, if you want to be famous, it's obviously there's mechanisms for getting famous for a short period of time. But if you'd wanted to be able to do this for a sustained period, you'd have to kind of be able to sing and play.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the mechanism of talent shows or whatever they call them is necessarily helping people get there, you know. So if you get somebody who's a got a natural talent, then obviously that's going to shine, you know.
I suppose with
it's no real different than what I would have said then, to be honest.
No.
You know? I think it would be a little tougher now because there isn't a lot of patience. The mechanism of the business side of it seems to be very impatient and eat people up quickly. So I'm kind of glad that I'm not starting out now, because whatever fortunes I have, I can just get on the stage and just play. I mean, I've got lots of songs, and I need never ever, you know, write another one, but I probably will, you know, and I've got lots to get by on now, but I'm not content just to sing the old ones. You should be proud if people like your old songs, but at the same time, you don't want to just be known for that. You want to try and spring a surprise or two, you know.
I suppose what's happened though, because the question was about getting into the music business, and because of because of those Simon Cowell type shows and other things.
Oh, they're pretty ghastly, really, aren't they? I mean, I feel sorry for the people at the centre of them, because they put so much of their dream into that, and I don't know that it's that. There's not a lot of heart in it. There's a lot of sentiment, you know, from what I gather. I don't really truthfully watch them that much, but I happened to see one the other day, and it seems to me there's a lot of fake emotion in building the people up, and then it's just it's a morality play, you know.
It's certainly as much about them and their story as it is about their music.
Well, that's everything now. So is it.
I find myself getting into arguments with people when they get excited by an act on those shows who clearly is a bit underwhelming or can't sing very well. I think people get excited because they see them within the context of that show, and within the context of that show, they're all right, and there's such a focus on their sad backstories that you're then willing them on. But if you take them out of that context and try to imagine watching a whole concert of theirs, or placing them within the rest of the music industry, then you can see very quickly that actually there's not much there.
Yeah, you said it, Richard. It'll be all on your shoulders now. No, I think that's probably true, but, you know, if they're just enjoying themselves in that moment, so long as they don't get too disappointed. I don't much care for, like, putting people up who clearly not the full shilling, you know, and are just, they're making fun of them, really. I think that's kind of cruel. That's like they used to do in the Middle Ages.
But do you think they're ghastly as shows? That was the word he used.
They are pretty ghastly, yeah. Yeah. If Busby Berkeley and Goebbels had got together, they could have made something out of it, you know.
You're right to stay a few more minutes, because we're going to take some news and hopefully hear you play live again as well. Elvis Costello is here. 85058, bacon@bbc.co.uk. It's 2:32. Here's Justin Green. Thank you very much, Bob Ballard. It's 2:37. Elvis Costello is here. Hello again, Elvis.
Hiya.
And our next guest after you is the actor Stephen Mangan, who I believe has come in here because he'd like to see you play live. Hi, Stephen.
I can't believe my luck. Elvis Costello with a guitar is just there.
Thank you.
You missed my story earlier that when Elvis arrived, he was basically tuning up and practicing in our office. Like he was busking at Five Live.
I should have got here earlier.
and bring you loose change.
Yeah, right, yeah. Mm. And if you want to throw some loose change at him when he performs the next few minutes, Stephen, that's entirely out of you. Elvis, you have been in. You're going to play another track off your album, by the way. So the album is National Ransom. And they're kind of little vignettes. And as I said earlier, interestingly, in the sleeve notes at the end of the lyrics, you place each song geographically somewhere and give it a time. As well, and so the first track, as we discussed, to some extent is about Wall Street. What's the next track you're going to play?
It's called A Voice in the Dark, and it's really the after all the journey of the record, and it's a double album. You know, I should say that it's a double LP. That's what I made. Obviously, when you get it on a CD, they jam it all into one horrible little plastic box. But if you can get it on vinyl, it's a thing of beauty. You know, I released some of it on 78. You know.
Why did you want to bring it out on vinyl?
Because I think the physical aspect of for one thing, it just sounds a whole lot better. I mean, MP3 sounds like hell.
You think vinyl sounds better?
Oh, way better. Yeah, it absolutely sounds closer to what we recorded in the studio. Yeah, it does, and it's a bigger. You know, you can get the artwork, you can read the thing, and it's just a substantial object. And yeah. I think you know, as I say, it's very likely to be the last album as an album that. You know, I get to make because there's no more retail, there's no more record companies. So
well, you could release it as a collection of songs on iTunes. So it would still.
I might just write songs and just play them. You know, I don't know. Maybe we put them out. I don't know how we'd do it. Maybe there'll be a pill you can take and you can. You know, it's all the time being. I don't want to be make it sound like I'm, you know, lamenting the passing or something in a bitter way. Because obviously, I saw 78s disappear in 45s with a new thing when I was a little kid. And then, you know, then there was cassettes and everybody had them. Then CDs were supposed to be the, you know, the end of everything. That was going to be, there was never going to be anything better than that. Then we, next, now we have MP3 players, so.
Mini discs were the funniest one.
Yeah, remember
they,
them, you know, yeah. I mean, they came and went. It's like, they got into the big pile of useless junk along with the Betamax recorders and the Atari computers.
It was the speed with which mini discs disappeared. They were all the rage for about
I think that was a CIA plot.
So you're saying, as you understand an album, the concept of an album, this will be your last album?
I don't know. I mean, right at the moment where I'm standing, I think it's probably, let's put it this way. When I got the opportunity to do this one, I thought, I've never made a double album. I'll make a double album if I can get it by the people that would slap a big price sticker on it. And I managed to sneak it through without anybody noticing that I'd actually made a double vinyl album. And then they jammed it all on, you know, you can get a lot of time on a CD, so.
Okay,
you
know.
So there you go. But the last song on the record is a hopeful song. After all, there's some pretty sad songs on this record.
So this
I will
is
make
a
no
voice,
apology for that.
A voice in the dark.
And it's prefaced with a tune.
And it's played, you've got On a Radio Hat 1931.
Yeah, a radio hat was a great invention that they had in the 30s. It was a big wooden hat that had a radio built into it.
Oh, this
like an
great.
Early iPod.
It sounds heavy and uncomfortable.
It was extremely heavy and uncomfortable, and that's why the songs had to sound like this.
Okay.
And here's a song from that time that prefaces it. A long time ago, a million years BC, the best things in life were absolutely free, but no one appreciated a sky that was always blue, and no one congratulated a moon that was always blue. So it was planned that it must vanish now and then, and you must pay before you get them back again. That's what storms were made for, and you shouldn't be afraid for. Ba 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 ba. You can read right through a book of matches, but that won't make you smart. You can laugh in the face of watches, but time will only break your heart. Kings reign beneath umbrellas, hide pennies down in cellars, and money pours down in yet. Not everyone gets soaking wet. When bars and bullies conspire to light out your spark, listen for a voice in the dark. Not a moment too soon, as we blew the moon and a wolf began to howl and tune. I'd round for all mankind a boon. Stand aside, you big baboon. Now I'm the prize invention. You're the image of yourself. Forget your cares, your disapproving stares. I'm not here trying to jump your borders. Just ask your nieces and your daughters. I'm flat as a soul, I'm happy as a clam. But you don't know the kind of man I am. Little fish swimming in a jealous shoal. Now my net is overflowing, and suddenly I seem to be all seeing and all knowing. I got something right here you might want to hear. I have no fear, lend a hand, lend an ear. If your rent money is in arrears, we'll be striking up a symphony bandstand. Long hair and loose a tooth, there'll be pirouettes and startling handstands. But who but acrobats know how to tell the truth? When all is said and then redundant, the gallivanting bag leg pants, I'll be your servant, you'll be my pal. And I'll be faithful, you know I shall. There's no fool like an old fool who blames it all upon his youth. When times are tough and you find you're down, without a star to wish upon, listen for a voice in the dark.
I was striking through a box of matches, hoping that one would spark. I heard somebody calling to me, a voice in the dark, a voice both wild and gentle, daring and confidential. I thought there was music playing, but it was all in only talk. When boys and bullies conspire to wind out your spark, fill up that empty space in your heart. Listen up when the herald says hark. Believe in a voice in the dark.
That was quite incredible, wasn't it?
With the verse from Pennies from Heaven at the top.
Knocked me over with a feather.
Did you have a little moment there where you thought, I can't quite believe this is happening?
I can't quite believe that Elvis was playing to Barack Obama and Paul McCartney. now he's got you and me.
You can't believe it.
Oh, honestly, that was remarkable. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really incredible. I'm a bit lost now, Stephen.
Me too. Don't ask me to say anything right now.
But that was a voice in the dark. With the sleeve now, as he explained, on a radio hat, 1931, and the album National Ransom is out now. There's so much more to ask you, and I think, sadly, you've got to go.
Yeah.
I've got hundreds more questions. You've got the place.
Thank you.
That's my pleasure. I want to ask you about comedy just for a moment. Stephen, too, you have been in pretty much all of my favourite comedies. You have been in The Larry Sanders Show.
That's right, yeah.
Stephen, he's been in The Larry Sanders Show.
I know.
You were in twice?
That's greedy.
Yeah, I know. It was pretty good. He's a good lad.
I think that's the best comedy of all time.
Genius.
Yeah.
You've been in Frasier.
That wasn't my finest moment.
Why not? Why didn't you like that?
I didn't do a good job on that one. I went a bit over the top. Yeah.
I think
you're
good.
The Simpsons. You're in The Simpsons.
Very yellow in that one.
Very yellow. And fairly recently, 30 Rock as well.
Season 2 and a Half Men as well.
2 and a Half Men.
With Sean Penn.
He's got a vastly superior comedy CV than I have, and he's a musician.
But has he been in Green Wing?
No.
Right. I think when you leave, because you've got to go, but I've got a little extract in there. You're in the season finale, third season finale of 30 Rock, and you perform a song, several of
you. Oh, yeah, well, it's a whole gang of us. I can't take credit for that. I mean, it's Mary J. Blige and Cyndi Lauper. Wyclef, and, yeah, it was like a We Are the World type thing for a kidney. It's a good tune.
It's a good little tune. It's really funny.
It's a toe tapper.
So we'll play it as you leave. And if you heard this tune, Stephen,
no, I haven't.
It's excellent. It's a fictional character called Milton Green. He needs a kidney, and they do, sort of Live Aid style songs to raise money for him. We'll play it in a moment. Elvis, thank you so much. So many questions for you. Lots of people essentially wanted to treat you like an Elvis Costello jukebox, saying things like "Indoor Fireworks," great song. One of many. Thanks, Elvis. Go on. Give us a verse. Please.
We play these parlor games. We play it make-believe. When we get to the part where I say that I'm gonna leave, everybody loves a happy ending, but we don't even try. We go straight past pretending to the part where everybody loves to cry. Indoor fireworks can still burn your fingers. Indoor fireworks, we swore we're safe as houses. They're not so spectacular. They don't burn up in the sky, but they can dazzle our delight. I'll bring it to you when the smoke gets in your eye. When the smoke gets in your eye.
How about that? our own personal Elvis Costello jukebox.
Don't and let him go. Lock the door. Lock the door.
And the next.
Do you know, I won't. It's taking the mickey to keep doing it because there are so many people making similar requests. Thank you.
Thank you for writing them in, and it's, you know, it's good to hear one like that that I wouldn't expect anybody to ask for. So that's
that was for Trev listening in Japan.
Trev. I'll be there in March.
Oh yeah, he says any gigs coming up in Japan. Yeah. There's the answer.
Yeah, March.
Thank you. I know that you've got to go. I can see through the window here. Your lovely people are agitating, and for perfectly good reason. So, thank you. I think that might have been my favourite moment of the year on this show, and I've only done it for a year, so thus my favourite moment on the show. But thank you very much. National Ransom is out now. All the best, Elvis Costello.
Thank you.